You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. To get this show every day, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. You can also tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Mets. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. If you want to try Built Bar today, go to BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code Locked On to get 20% off your next order. All right, so this is our first three-segment show. In the first segment, what I want to do is talk about Sam McWilliams, who spoke with the media over the weekend. I want to get into some of his comments and continue to talk about why I believe McWilliams will be a really nice addition to the Mets bullpen this year. He is one of maybe the main arms you should all be watching as spring training games begin, because this is a guy that could have a really big impact on the Mets if he really pops off. In the second segment, we are going to start to talk about J.D. Davis. I want to take a look at his season last year offensively and what we can maybe expect from him moving forward into this season. Then in the third segment, I'm going to be joined by Thomas Hall, who wrote a very good piece about Davis's defense for Mets Marais. And I want to kind of talk about some of the stats he unveiled about how Davis can maybe get better defensively. Before we get to any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter at FinkelsteinRyan. And you can find some of my writing about the Mets at MetsMorizeOnline.com. So let's start off talking about McWilliams. As you may recall, the Mets signed him to a very interesting contract at the offset of the offseason, where they basically bought a prospect. For all intents and purposes, they gave him a major league deal that guaranteed more money than anyone else would have, but they still had the ability to option him to the minors. And this is a guy, when you're looking at what the Mets did throughout the offseason with their bullpen, I'm starting to believe he might have been factored into the plans a little bit more than we would have thought. I think because he has a track record as a starting pitcher throughout his minor league career, we always thought maybe he was just depth for the back end of the rotation, but maybe it's really the back end of the bullpen that they're thinking about for McWilliams. In fact, he says as much as far as a role in the bullpen, where he talks about how he moved to the bullpen in 2020 at the alternate site and in spring training. He says, quote, "I think mentally coming in out of the bullpen has helped me get back to being a little more aggressive and kind of fill up the strike zone, challenging guys. I think that will definitely carry over into the starting role, just pounding the zone, not being afraid to throw strikes, and letting myself play." So if you look at that, I do believe he is going into camp trying to win one of the spots at the end of the bullpen, because it's a lot easier right now than trying to get a rotation spot after the Mets signed Taijuan Walker. I think he's still probably fancies himself as a starting pitcher for later on in his career. But for now, if he can break through out of the bullpen, that's something that will at least help him get some exposure. And for the Mets, he can really be a big benefit because he has plus stuff. And at times, it's hard to find those guys who are 6'7", like McWilliams, who can touch 97. And so I think that's what we're going to see throughout spring training, seeing if that stuff really plays, if that fastball and slider combination can work and turn him into this year's big find out of the bullpen. It's ironic he came from Tampa, because they're usually the team that finds those gems. And, you know, last week Jack Ramsey was on the podcast and he kind of mentioned that he's a little bit hesitant to be all in on McWilliams because Tampa didn't keep him around. But we also don't know what Tampa offered to keep him, and obviously the Mets offered him more. So this is an interesting player to look at for sure. One of the things he talked about with the media is how he has really started to get behind his fastball, and that has really improved to get that vertical movement. If you watch him throw these bullpens, it's really a violent kind of whipping motion, the way he gets behind his pitches and really uses all of that big frame. And when you're talking about a pitcher, again, who's 6'7", who can touch 97 with that long reach, with the whipping motion he's creating as he's getting behind that fastball, I mean, that is going to be very tough to hit for opposing batters. And I think because of that, there really is a lot of upside here. So as the spring training games start, and as you're listening to this on Monday, today is the first game of the Mets spring training calendar. They'll be playing the Marlins at 1:05. This will be an arm to watch. You want to watch out for whenever Mick Williams gets on the mound. He will not be pitching on Monday. Luis Rojas already announced that Harold Gonzalez will get the start and will likely go two innings. That's a pitcher that Jack Ramsey talked about a lot last week, a very interesting arm for the Mets. He'll be followed by Sean Reed Foley, who the Mets got in the Steven Matz trade. Riley Gilliam, a relief pitcher who is a non-roster invite. Trevor Hildenberger, another one. You got Steven Tarpley and Thomas Zabacki, all expected to pitch. And then Jordan Yamamoto will start on Tuesday. So we don't know when McWilliams will really get into action, but this is someone that I have my eyes on. And when you're looking at the Mets bullpen right now, and they never got a Liam Hendricks or a Brad Hand, and you know Trevor May was the first big addition the Mets made on their pitching staff, and he's going to be great, and you got Aaron Loop in there. But I think this is another arm that you look at that I would put into that Miguel Castro, you know, class, where these are pitchers with high octane arms that you can look up at, you know, the midpoint of the season. He might be a really big part of the Mets bullpen. Now, in just a minute, we're going to start to talk about J.D. Davis. I'm going to first focus on his offense before I bring on Thomas Hall to talk about his defense. But BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but you got the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL in full swing. And BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, even reality TV. They have real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you could imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. So head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with our promo code LOCKEDON. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. So before we bring on Thomas Hall to talk about J.D. Davis' defense, I just want to focus on what he does well and what has Davis right now being projected as the Mets' everyday third baseman. And that is obviously his 2019 season. Because you go back to his time with the Astros, and Davis was a top prospect who, quite frankly, was looking towards a short major league career. He was really struggling offensively before getting traded to the Mets, and he had sporadic playing time on a really good team, so it was tough for him to really break through, although he was a very small part of the 2017 Astros that maybe had a little bit of extra benefit when it came to stepping into the box that year. But you look at his numbers with Houston, 581 OPS, OPS plus of 59. Not great, okay? Not great at all. Then in 2019, he was arguably, a top 3-4 story of the Mets season. Obviously, Pete Alonso stole all the headlines. Jacob DeGrom won another Cy Young. Jeff McNeil made his first All-Star team. Michael Conforto had a very solid and kind of understated season. When you look back at the numbers, he really set career highs across the board that year. But J.D. Davis was this newcomer, and he was the one move that Brody Van Wagenen made that worked. He hit 307 his first year with the Mets, had a 369 on base percentage, a 527 slugging percentage, an 895 OPS, a 136 WRC plus, and he also completely just tore the cover off the ball at Citi Field, which made him even more of a fan favorite. If you look at that season, the one stat that does kind of make you believe there might have been a little bit of fool's gold there is his BABIP, which is batting average on balls put in play, and it was 355 that season. That's alarmingly high. That makes you think he was a little bit fortunate, but at the same time, when you hit the ball as hard as Davis does, you might get a little bit higher of a BABIP. I think he's probably more likely to continue with what he did in 2020, where his BABIP was 318, but that is an interesting number, and it does kind of show you why he was so successful in 2019. But then again, you look at that slugging percentage of 527 in 2019, and you know he just really was locked in. And I don't know if it was the lack of a traditional spring training in 2020 that hurt him. I don't know if it was just not having Chili Davis there to make those adjustments. There's a lot of different things that can go into it for why he struggled this past season. And honestly, the other thought that we can't just keep forgetting about is that it was a shortened season. And maybe if he had a real second half, he actually could have got himself out of it and brought those numbers up. But to look at what his offensive statistics were in 2020, the batting average was down 247. The on-base percentage was actually up in 2019. His on-base percentage was 371. So that's one good thing you could say about Davis in 2020 is he was getting on base at a very high clip. The problem is his slugging percentage plummeted down below 400 to 389, and that's where you get the 761 OPS and the 116 WRC+. So if Davis can show a little bit more power this year, which we know he has in that bat, well, then you can get into a situation where he will raise all those other numbers up. And I mean, honestly, if he hits 247 with power and gets on base at that same clip, you're talking about a very good offensive player. I also want to note that, you know, Davis started off hot last year, had a 933 OPS through his first 18 games, and that was going up to August 11th. And then he kind of tailed off and he just never got into one of those extended grooves again. So you would hope that in this upcoming season, we'll see some more hot streaks out of Davis. And he is one of those hitters that can carry your lineup for a week. And I think that's something that as much as I've harped on the defense and as much as I would still love that platoon and seeing Guillorme get a lot of playing time, whether it's at second and third with Jeff McNeil playing that other spot and you really, you know, shore up that infield defense to the point where it's elite, especially knowing that your outfield defense might be a little bit suspect, I still would go that route and let Davis do what he does best and start against all left-handed pitching and be that right-handed elite bat to go to off the bench against a lefty in a big spot. I feel like that's a way the Mets can really win a lot of games to go that route. I understand why they're still leaning towards giving Davis a little bit more playing time than that because he does give you that upside. He does give you that ability to hit the three-run homer that breaks open a game. And quite frankly, Luis Guillorme just isn't that type of hitter. I think he can save you from a double that scores two by making a play in the hole that Davis wouldn't. But we'll see what the Mets ultimately value. If you look at the projection systems on Davis, they basically see him being somewhat close to what he was in 2020. A hitter with a 117 WRC+. In fact, actually, those numbers can range, some have him being as low as 104 on that metric. So they have him being a slightly above average hitter. They also aren't expecting him to replicate his high on-base numbers from his first two seasons with the Mets. They see him as being a guy a lot lower in the on-base percentage than the 371 mark he had in 2020 and the 369 mark he had in 2019. So I don't know what it is about the projection models that don't value his ability to get on base, but they do believe he'll slug more than he did last year. Maybe not quite the same mark that he had in 2019 when his slugging percentage was over 500, but they see him as, you know, a 450 slugging percentage guy, kind of a 320 on base percentage guy, which gets you to that very similar 760, 770 OPS range that he had last season. So it's interesting that the projection models don't love him. I look at J.D. Davis as a player that is going to crush crush left-handed pitching, and someone who, when he gets hot, will get locked in, and he's going to give you good at-bats more times than not. As an offensive player, I still really like J.D. Davis. My concerns have always gone back to the defense, but Thomas Hall is going to come on in just a minute here and maybe give you a little bit of optimism on how Davis can improve in that category. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever, with 18 amazing flavors, including the caramel brownie bar, cookies and cream, which is my favorite, the cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, and carrot cake, as well as the apple almond crisp. Go to builtbar.com and you can find all of their great flavors. These really are protein bars that taste like candy bars, come covered in 100% chocolate. Built Bars are soft and easy to chew, and they are healthy, as they come low in calorie, low in sugar, high in protein, and high in fiber. If you want to try Built Bar today, go to builtbar.com. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to get 20% off your next order. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at builtbar.com. All right, Mets fans, happy to be joined by Thomas Hall, who does some awesome writing for us at Mets Marize. He really dives into the numbers. I really encourage you to read his work. Thanks for joining me today.
Oh, thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate joining your show.
Yeah, so this one piece that I wanted to talk about is how J.D. Davis could improve at third base this season. And anyone who listens to this show knows I've been very hard on J.D. for his defense. I have talked about me preferring more of a defensive first option like Luis Guillorme over Davis because those defensive metrics have been so bad. What is it about Davis's defense that really hurts him when it comes to those advanced metrics?
I mean, really, it's his range. You know, if you really want to dive into the analytics, you can see how his range affects how the Mets allow runs. Right. You can look even back at 2020. He had a negative 1.4 range run score, which is pretty awful. But also, if you just look at OAA, you see that he finished tied for the lowest OAA rating among all qualified third basemen last season. So based on those two factors, you really got to hope that he's able to take it up a notch this season. But digging into his range, you look at his charts from Baseball Savvy, and you can see that he has had success when ranging to his left, but not when he's going to his right. So naturally, you'd think that you'd position him closer to the line, which, to be fair, the Mets did a little bit last year, but nowhere near enough, because obviously his results would have showed that.
I think that based on those metrics you talk about, and I've mentioned this a bit since I read the article, it makes the most sense to essentially staple him to that line, especially when you have Francisco Lindor next to him, has no problem going to his backhand and getting balls in the hole. To me, it makes a lot of sense to just say, look, guard the line with your life. We know that you have the range you do have is to your left. And hopefully by doing that, that can kind of mitigate some of those metrics that you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more on that, especially because, you know, unlike with Ahmed Rosario and Jimenez, those guys, like, sure, they're okay defensively, but they're not Lindor, right? They're not a multi-gold glove award winner who's literally going to be like a vacuum at shortstop, right? So even if the Mets didn't move JD closer to the line, he probably wouldn't field as many balls to his left anyway. So it really works out both ways if they staple him to the third baseline, like you said.
Yeah, and then the one other thing that I find with Davis, and I always bring up the play. Do you remember the play last year where there was a ball to, I think it was to his left, and Davis kind of elated a bit and his glove went flying in the air and the ball went up and he caught it with his bare hands. You remember that play?
I do remember that. That was pretty funny to watch.
Yeah. The thing about that play that always cracks me up is even in that instance, he double clutched with his bare hand.
Yeah. And that's another problem with him too, right? He double clutches far too often. And really, like, we all know he's better suited for DH or first base, but the way the Mets roster is constructed right now, we just got to live with it about him at third base. But yeah, like, along with his range, his arm has been awful too. He has so many throwing errors in his career at third base.
And that's surprising because you would think that the one thing that Davis would bring defensively is his arm as a former college pitcher. I mean, he has a strong arm. It just comes down to accuracy and, I guess, efficiency, throwing, getting that ball out of his hand quickly. That really makes for those errors that we see, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, you can go back and look at his highlights too and really break down what he did wrong. It's not the fact that he doesn't have power. He does, especially as a former pitcher. But it's being poor with his accuracy. And he is a little too aggressive at times too. He rushes his throws when he doesn't need to. Like, I looked at some of his errors he made last year, and a lot of the time it was he had a ton of time to throw over to first base, but he just rushed it because whatever the reason was, whether it was too much pressure on himself or whatnot, it just was awful.
Yeah, and it's gonna hurt the Mets. And I guess the last thing I'll leave you with here, the options at third base right now for the Mets, you basically have J.D. Davis, sliding Jeff McNeil back to third, Jonathan Villar, or Luis Guillorme. Do you think it would make a little bit more sense for the Mets to kind of prioritize getting Davis' bat in the lineup against left-handed pitching and then using him as that bat off of your bench with no DH to really get into a big spot late in the game against left-handed pitching on those days where he's not starting?
Yeah, I could see that. I think definitely when there isn't a lefty on the mound, if his defense continues to not play up to the level that everyone hopes that he can play up to, I think, yeah, he's got to be on the bench. And then when a lefty comes in, you bring him off the bench. But ultimately, I think, you know, his bat is going to determine how much playing time he gets this year, because you know, even if he's poor defensively, if he's slugging the way he did in 2019, it's going to offset that poor defense, right? So I think ultimately, if he mashes at the plate and fixes some of his swing issues that he had last year, I think he may end up being the everyday third base option. And that may hurt the playing time for Guillorme, unfortunately.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be fascinating to watch as we get into spring training games now to see what it looks like over there and to see what it looks like at the plate. Well, thank you for coming on this first MMO segment. Where can people find your work as far as Twitter and what else you do with Mets and Marauders, writing those analytics piece?
So my Twitter handle is ThomasHall85. I tweet probably more than I should, but it's yeah, tweet all about the Mets, other teams as well, because I don't just cover the Mets as well. But yeah, with MMO, I dive into analytics a couple times a week and give my thoughts on the team.
Awesome. That'll be all for today's edition of Locked On Mets. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan. Follow the show at Locked On Mets. Also, if you want to get some more great baseball content during spring training, check out the Locked On MLB podcast, hosted by our own walking baseball encyclopedia, Paul Francis Sullivan, but we all call him Sully. Check out Locked On MLB for a unique look at the majors, both past and present, featuring exciting guest interviews, routine check-ins from the Locked On MLB Network's team of local experts, and insightful analysis of the day's biggest stories. Locked On MLB is the single best source for your daily baseball talk. So subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts.